Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's tax time, and as promised, we've brought back two local experts to help those of us who've put it off until the 11th hour. Mary McVicker is a tax manager with GBQ Partners and is representing the Ohio Society of CPAs today. Thanks for joining us again, Mary.
Thank you.
And also with us, Bruce Gelsinger. He is in his eighth year of volunteering for the AARP Tax Aid Program. Welcome back to the show, Bruce.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
So, you know, last time we talked, it was a couple months ago, and we agreed that, well, you know, maybe there's always that group of people that wait until the last minute, and they need help too. So that's why you're here. But we could probably start off with talking about folks who have already filed their taxes and kind of what their expectations should be at this point. But as for those of you out there listening, if you have any questions, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. And if you have filed and have some questions about what the response time has been or how the IRS has responded or the state or your municipality, you know, we're interested in hearing about those questions too. So 614-292-8513, whether you still owe or still have to file or not, give us a call. We're talking about taxes. So for those among us who have filed and they're wondering, where's their refund? What should their expectation be now that we haven't had a government shutdown, I suppose?
Is, you know, yes, everyone is working again.
The whole show would have been different if we'd had a government shutdown.
If individuals have filed electronically, refunds generally come back in about 3 weeks or so, sometimes a little sooner than that for the state. And if it's been 5 or 6 weeks and you don't have your refund, you filed electronically, there are ways to find out what the status of that is. You can go to the website for either the federal government or the state. Or there's an 800 number to call, too. For the IRS, it's 800-829-1954. And you have to provide your Social Security number to make sure they know who they're talking to and that sort of thing. For the state, there's a refund hotline number, which is 800-282-1784. So those are good to have if it's been too long. If you've paper filed, then allow 6 to 8 weeks probably for that refund to come through.
Do they hire extra people at the IRS this time of year?
That's a good question.
I'm sure they do. I don't have the statistics on
no,
that.
I don't either. That's a good question.
We'll post both of those phone numbers, by the way, on our website at wosu.org/allsides if you didn't catch them. So 6 to 8 weeks for a paper?
Well, and one of the reasons for that is think about what happens when you file a paper return, you send it into a processing center. Someone then has to enter it into their electronic systems, essentially put on a computer, just like we would do if we filed electronically. So that takes time to do, depending on how many bins of returns there are. Hopefully there's no errors in that process, but that's always possible too. And that's why I encourage all the clients to e-file. In fact, there's some requirements from federal professional preparers to e-file.
Right.
Because you get to see what exactly has been put in, not what someone else may transcribe from what's written on a piece of paper.
There's requirements that preparers e-file?
Right. As a paid preparer, we electronically must file unless there's a reason that we need to opt out. Once you, I believe the threshold's 100 returns. Ohio, we initiated that, my firm, last year. Federal, this year, we're doing that for all of our clients. I think the good thing about it is you know exactly then when your return's been accepted. When it's in the hands and we know, okay, it has been received, there's assurance to that that you didn't necessarily have with paperwork, even if, you know, certified mailing, obviously you would know it's there, but at least now you know it's there sitting with every other e-filed return. But, yeah, I think electronic filing does seem to speed things up a little bit.
If you file by paper, can you still get the if you're getting a tax return, can you still have that automatically deposited in your accounts? Or
yes.
Is that only with e-filing?
No, okay. you can indicate on the return how you want your money to come back.
Is that becoming more popular now too?
I think so, yeah. I have quite a few clients.
I believe it is, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I have to take the time to go all the way and get the check cashed.
Right.
Well, with the various fraud issues and people stealing things out of mailboxes and such, Social Security has recommended direct deposit. I think the IRS is in line with that. The IRS also offers some other options, such as splitting your refunds or purchasing savings bonds.
And Ohio's done the same with their 529 plan, using your refund to directly be deposited into a tuition plan with the Ohio 529 savings plan, things like that as well. So they're getting more creative with what you can do with your money if you don't necessarily want it back to you.
So what if you're not so lucky and you actually owe? Do you have to necessarily pay that when you file? Or is there any leeway?
April 18th this year, April 15th, our statutory deadline is the deadline. The thing to remember is April 15th is a deadline for paying tax. If you can't file your return because you don't have everything in yet, say you've invested in partnerships, you have outside investments that you're waiting on information because they've extended their returns, that doesn't accept you from the April 15th deadline. What you have to do then is pay in your tax at that time, what you expect it to be. If you then go and file your return and it's more, interest and penalties are calculated from when it was due. There's also interest that would be calculated for estimated tax penalty if you didn't have it paid in throughout the year as it needed to be, depending on your situation and how your income is earned. But April 15th is, unfortunately, the deadline for paying tax. If you need an extension of time, the federal form is Form 4868. That must be filed by Monday. You can electronically file it if you have a preparer who can do so for you or have a means of doing so, or send in paper. If you don't owe anything, you just send it in indicating that nothing's due. If you do, then you remit the payment then. That extends your filing deadline until October 15th, and this year we get even a few more days again at October 15th because it falls on Saturday to October 17th.
And if you don't pay, even you're want an extension, you still have to pay something, though.
Yes.
And if you fall short of what is actually due in the final analysis, are the penalties and interest charged only on the amount that's outstanding or on
Correct.
The whole amount?
Correct. Okay. It would be the underpayment piece of what you owe. Correct.
One thing I've heard clients ask me, well, I think I owe a lot of money. I want to file an extension and I'll pay them later. But just as Mary said, it doesn't work that way. The extension is for filing. The extension is not for paying. Now, in some situations, if there's a lot of money owed and you can't pay, there are some methods to go through to make payments over time to the IRS.
But you're still being charged, aren't you?
You're still being charged, and they're costly to set up, between $50 and about $100, depending on what payment method you're going to take, whether it's a direct debit or a credit card or something like that. So that's just the upfront charge plus the carrying charge to pay it off. So it's not a good solution, but it is an option that some people need to utilize.
If you don't pay in time, you're going to pay more.
Yes.
Right. No matter what. If you have a question or comment for us, your tax returns are due on Monday. And you have some last-minute questions or concerns, or if you've received, if you've already received either your refund or other questions from the IRS or the state, and you're concerned about that, and you have some questions or comments, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Our guests, Mary McVicker, she is representing the Ohio Society of CPAs as a tax advisor, and Bruce Gelsinger, he is works for the AARP Tax Aid Program, where he's a volunteer. You're an engineer by training.
Yes, that's the background.
So you just like to crunch those numbers one way or the other.
Yes.
If you're planning for next year, what could people do right now to start planning for a year from now life better?
I think just to frame this a little bit, a lot of people say, oh, it's tax time. I have to get my taxes filed. They get filed. Oh, they're filed. Hey, I'm good to now until next February or March when I'll file them again. And I would encourage people to do something a little more than that. If they owed money this year, more than $1,000 to the federal or more than $500 to the state, then they need to be looking at making some adjustments, either withholding or making quarterly payments, so they don't owe that additional money next year, because that additional money usually comes with some penalty and interest. People who may get thousands of dollars back this year say, well, wait a minute. Why are you letting the government use that money for the year? Don't you want to use it during the year? And that may also necessitate some changes in either withholding or quarterly payments.
I would add on to that, too. If you're looking at, do I want to make quarterlies versus withholdings, if you have the opportunity to adjust your withholdings because your income, you know, is mostly just wage income, things like that, it's easier to manage. It's much easier to manage through withholdings than to, you know, set yourself up on quarterly installments. And remember, the quarterly installments, then if you don't pay, and then you, if you don't pay the first one, then you pay the second one, well, then you have that interest period from when you should have paid to the second one. Withholding, there's no way, withholdings are treated as paid throughout the year ratably. So as long as at the end of the year you've withheld, then you've paid in, and there's not a, you know, quarterly calc there for that. So,
but if you're on a, if you're self-employed,
right,
then that,
you
that's
need to,
when
yes,
self-employed and some other sources of income may require you to pay to the quarterly assessment.
But pay attention to your withholdings, because as you said, you know, if you're overpaid too, some people like that savings account. They like that idea that at the every April 15th they're going to get a refund. They bank on it. But again, that's money that you're holding on account that you could otherwise have throughout the year.
That you would might otherwise blow, I guess, in the case of the case of the people who actually like it. Peggy from Bexley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm in my state tax return. At the end of the year, 2010, late December, I did an IRA rollover from regular IRA to a Roth IRA. So I owe taxes on that. And I mailed in a check in December. I'm reading this return, and it says I've got to pay interest because it wasn't withheld, but instead I sent it in as a separate check.
Well, two things there. One, you did a rollover from a Roth to a regular IRA in 2010?
From a regular to a Roth.
I'm sorry, yes. Yes, obviously,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That the election for 2010 is when you roll over from a regular to...
No, I'm not talking about the election.
Right.
Well, actually, the election would apply, too, but I also...
Okay, so you've made the election to tax it all in 2010.
Okay, assuming that I did, yeah.
Okay, because just for your information, the rules
yep,
this
right,
year
yeah,
for 2010 are yeah. that it would be deferred and taxed in 2011 and 12.
Right.
The other thing you're saying here is this is... I think what you would need to do is when you're looking at your estimated tax penalty on the Ohio return, it's doing it that way because it's showing your income is all being earned ratably throughout the year.
Yeah.
So you would need to look at an election to annualize, where you would show then that income was earned in the fourth period.
Okay.
And that, you know, that would take that into consideration.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Peggy. We're going to take a break. When we return, we'll continue with calls. And if you have an email, you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you have a question or comment about last-minute tax filing questions, or if you're wanting to think about how to prepare for the year ahead, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher. Later today at 2, join 89.7 NPR News for coverage of President Obama's fiscal policy speech. NPR will provide complete analysis of the president's plans for the 2012 budget. Listen to an NPR News special this afternoon at 2 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the estate of Donald R. Glancy, whose life was enriched by public radio and television, and whose bequest seeks to encourage others to discover WOSU Public Media.
And it's 47 degrees in downtown Columbus, mostly sunny skies today and a high near 62. Clear skies tonight and a low right around 40 degrees. Sunny skies for Thursday and a high near 70. Clouds Thursday night and a low of 46. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. It's tax time. It's a deadline for tax time on Monday. So if you have a question or comment about that, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joining us in the studio, Mary McVicker with GBQ Partners. She's representing the Ohio Society of CPAs today. Thanks again for joining us, Mary.
Thank you.
And also with us, Bruce Gelsinger, in his eighth year of volunteering for the AARP Tax Aid Program. Again, Bruce, glad you could join us again.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Brian in Columbus, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I just had a quick question about local city taxes. Does the same date apply to them for the various cities here in Ohio and in Franklin County as far as when they are due and need to be paid?
Actually, most of them... We typically do April 18th, but April 15th, but I think some of them might actually have April 30th as the due date. But I typically, yes, it is April 15th. And then if you extend them, then some of them are either due October 15th or October 30th. But you'd have to check, but most municipalities are either April 15th or April 30th.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, take care. 614-292-8513 if you have a question or comment. There's a lot of calls coming in, so try to be patient with our screener. He's working as hard as he can. Ben in Dublin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. I have a question. Last year we had some damage done to our basement due to flooding, and we were then reimbursed later, and I'm wondering what the tax treatment of that. It's on the order of $15,000.
Mary?
So you were reimbursed through your insurance company for the proceeds?
Yes.
Or sorry, for the damage?
Yes, it was not exactly the same amount, but it was, you know, roughly the same.
There's things as casualty losses. I believe it's up to like $100 casualty loss. But were you not reimbursed the full amount then?
We got more than we needed to do the restoration.
Okay. Insurance proceeds typically wouldn't cause a taxable situation there.
The caveat would be, did you put that on Schedule A as a casualty loss last year and then get reimbursed after that return was filed?
That's true.
Yeah, no, it all happened last calendar year.
Okay, so your net casualty loss would be net of any insurance proceeds, which would be the reportable loss on your tax return.
Okay, and if we were fully covered, then we don't have any income or losses to report, really.
That's correct.
Correct.
Great. Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ben.
All right. Bye.
Dudley and Howard, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. Just wanted to comment on our situation. We e-filed, and they acknowledged that they think our return is about 1% of what we thought it should be, and they were going to ask for more information. We get another communication, and they don't want any more documents. They just want 16 weeks to decide.
What to do, right?
Right.
Well, the IRS does receive a lot of documentation from employers, from pension providers, et cetera, of your income. And if they think the numbers look different than what have been reported, they will seek more information. You should consider yourself fortunate if they're just looking for information right now, because sometimes the letters come out saying, well, you owe us because you underreport it. If they're just seeking information, then there appears to be some question that needs to be clarified.
Yeah, they're probably doing a matching right now, matching your W-2, any 1099s you receive and you reported to what was actually issued by your employer, by any investments you hold. They're matching that up.
Okay.
Hey, Dudley, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
After you e-filed, how long was it before they responded?
About 3 weeks.
Okay.
That is really a short time frame, because a lot of time it takes a year to match up all the data and for those questions to come back.
When they responded with the question.
With the question.
Yeah.
That is really
weeks.
A short time frame. Yes.
Okay. All right, Dudley, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care. We have from Dale on Facebook. We were going to e-file this year, but heard there was a hook where you end up paying something. Have any other listeners had this problem? My understanding is that it is supposed to be free, right? We have smiles in the studio.
It depends what program you're using.
It depends.
If you go out and purchase a program and e-file through there, sometimes there's provision for the first e-file to be free and others have a charge. If you e-file with the AARP program, that is a free service we provide. The IRS actually provides it. And maybe you can comment on what the CPAs do regarding e-filing fees.
Well, yeah, there's no, as far as a paid prepare, there's, you know, typically there's not a separate fee for electronic filing. There are, the e-filing that's available through the IRS, that I thought that was free. Is that not?
Yes. On the website at the IRS also, that is a free if you choose to file your own taxes on their website.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Dale, for that email. Jen in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
I just had a quick question, actually sort of following up on the e-filing about tax software. You know, there's TurboTax and all of those things. But now that the federal and state have their own e-files, do you all find that for people with a basic return, it's really not necessary for them to use a software? Sort of, are they more trouble than they're worth? Or what's your feeling on those?
There's many tools out there that are available. And if you're going to use the tools, I suggest you have some resources available to make sure that you've got the right information going on the right lines of the return and that sort of thing. Because mm-hmm. even though the software is there, you can enter the information in the wrong place, and then the IRS is going to explore that with you and say, well, wait a minute, we have a record that you had a pension. You don't have anything on a pension line, for example, that sort of thing. So it's good to have the resource. But, yes, there are on the state and the federal website, there are all the forms you need if you're familiar with the tax law and can fill them out.
When you say resource, you mean using a program to set it all up and then downloading it that way?
Not necessarily.
That'll help you work through it, or?
There are also reference manuals. The Pub 17
I
is
see.
A good manual from the U.S. government. It's a very thick one. It's not necessary in some returns. If you have just a W-2 and maybe some interest, it's pretty straightforward where those go on the return.
Mary, why would anyone use software, spend the money on software, if they could just do it online right through the IRS?
Well, I think a lot of people, how often you look at your tax returns once a year, and if you're waiting till the 11th hour, you want some sort of comfort that it's not just you looking at your tax returns, that you are doing everything properly. So I think the resource is there as a way to guide most people. There's guidance. Obviously, there are other resources, such as Bruce, your program offers many resources, I'm sure, even if you just came in with questions.
Yes, absolutely.
There are many, many resources, but it's just a matter of how much guidance do you need to get through it. If you sit down every year and you use everything at your fingertips and you don't feel like you need the programming because you've done this so routinely year after year, that's one thing. But if something new changed, something came into your life, or there's new tax legislation that you think might affect you, I think it's always good to have someone else to be looking at it with you. Either through a program or through a preparer.
That help, Jen?
That's it. Great. Thank you so much.
You bet. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We have an email from Debbie. She writes, aren't people required to claim an additional withholding on your W-4 if you are single and have only one job? Is this an option or is it the law?
The law states that you should withhold to match your income for tax purposes. And as I mentioned earlier, if you owe over $1,000 at the end of the year, there will be penalty and interest assessed on the amount that's over that $1,000 at the federal level or $500 at the state. What individuals own under each individual circumstance on their withholding, it's up to them. But the requirement should be that you want to hit pretty closely what you think you're going to owe.
And you are, yeah, you're able to adjust your withholdings as you, the more allowances that you put on your withholding, the less that's, am I saying that right? Let's see. The more allowances that you have, the less that's being withheld. So if you have nothing, then I think you're withholding quite a bit, and that's how you can adjust that way. I think think the problem is when you start saying that you have all these different allowances and you don't need to do the withholding. But there are rules there with payroll tax reporting. Speak with your employer. Make sure that you are doing everything on the up and up. But yes, you can adjust your withholding to take additional withholding, as she said, yes.
And if you have some education credits or you have the energy credit this year, or perhaps itemized deductions with interest and real estate taxes and that sort of thing, you would have a different number that you would put on your W-4 for your withholding.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and an email from Joe writes, I recently retired from the IRS after 32 years. Congratulations, Joe. Yes, they do hire seasonal employees at the processing centers to process the returns. And I'm just wondering if those people go off and become tax preparers somewhere out there. Are they kind of do you know very many people who have worked for the IRS and then?
As far as my relationship with the IRS, I see them on the audit side. So maybe after they do the returns, they then start auditing them, and I see them the rest of the year.
Well, I work with a number of different IRS folks, not on the auditing side normally, but on the some other divisions within IRS. And I really can't speak to the temporary employees and what they might do off season or whether mm-hmm. they just are employed for several months with the IRS. But I'm sure there's a variety because I'm sure there's a lot of them.
If you need to change your tax return this year, you made a mistake, you realized it after the fact, what do you do?
Well, I think that's a very good question because one of the things I've seen is that somebody who might hold some mutual funds or an investment with a brokerage firm, and during the year they get from one investment into another. Maybe it's within the same fund family, whether it's Vanguard or Fidelity or one of those others. And they say, oh, no, I didn't sell any stocks this year, so I don't have any taxable event. And then they realize, oh, wait a minute, just because I traded or I actually did have a sale, that is a taxable event. So if that was missed, or maybe a 1099-R retirement income or something like that was missed on your return, there is a way to file an amended return. And it's better for you to catch the mistake and file than wait for the IRS to catch the mistake and ask you to refile or ask you for the penalty. A 1040X is the form that's used. This can be found on the IRS website. The form looks relatively simple. It's only 2 pages, but there's 10 pages of instructions that go along with it. So I would encourage you to read through those to make sure. It can be used for amending your income, amending the number of dependents you have, or anything else. But be sure on page 2 to enter why you're filing the amended return and to put the supporting documentation with it.
How long do you have to do that?
Statute of limitations, 3 years. So 3 years from when you file. It does vary. There is varying for that statute. If it's a gross misstatement, I think that changes it to 6 years. But most things with the IRS are 3 years. I was going to say, again, an amended return, if there's additional tax due, that tax was still due for that return year on that April.
Doesn't matter 15th. If it was an honest mistake or not.
Yes.
Right. It could be a math error. It could be something else. That tax is still due. If it's a refund that will be generated, you only have 3 years to file to get that refund back. So April 15th this year would be the last day you could file a 2007 return, amended return,
okay,
to get a refund.
If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests this hour, Bruce Gelsinger, tax aid leader, regional tax aid leader for the AARP, and also Mary McVicker of the Ohio Society of CPAs. Joining us today to answer your questions about last-minute tax filings or what to do for next year. Moses in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Hey.
Okay, I got a question for you guys. I usually fill like every W-2 form every year, but this year, since I work for preparing, I did as a miscellaneous. And I heard that you can get a deducted for your mileage and for your gas stuff, and I keep track of everything, and I did put it in, like, in order as the TurboTax asked me to, but it did not deduct anything. And I already sent it about two weeks ago, but I don't know what to do with it. I don't know. So if you can answer my question, that would be That would be my question.
Okay.
Self-employment income, I believe, is what you're talking about, or a non-employee, a contractor, which is shown on 1099 miscellaneous form. And that needs to be reported on the Schedule C or Schedule CEZ. It's a type of business income. Yes, there are expenses associated with a production net income that can be deducted. Okay. If you're going to one work location, the primary mileage to and from that work location is not one of those expenses that can be deducted. But if you're going to multiple work locations, for example, then the mileage between those various work locations could be. If in the course of the business you need tools, you need some other supplies and that sort of thing in that business, then yes, those are deductible expenses.
Right. Back out your commuting miles. And your business miles, and there's two ways to look at it. You can look at actual expenses, things like gas repairs, things like that for your vehicle, or you can do the standard mileage rate for 2010 when you're looking at how many miles you're using that vehicle in business. But yes, your Schedule C income is subject to self-employment. So obviously, if there are costs that were incurred by you as a part of generating that income, then that all should be on your Schedule C, and that's what should be reported as taxable for self-employment tax then, and then as well for your income. But your Schedule C should show it all.
When it comes to the mileage, going back and forth to your primary place of work is not deductible. Hang on a second, Moses. But what if you're at maybe you're a contractor and you're at a job outside, and you're heading from that job into your primary place of work. What about that?
That's a differentiation. The commuting expenses to your primary,
even if it's from another job that's beyond what your own home is.
If you're going from one job site to another job site, then those are business expenses.
Okay.
The commuting expenses to get to the first job site is commuting and not an expense
that can
be deducted.
Moses, did that help?
Yeah, it helped. I just got a quick question. So to make myself clear, like every time that I go from my house to, let's say, downtown or let's say, to Children's Hospital, that wouldn't count, right? Is that what it is?
The first leg of the trip doesn't count.
Okay, gotcha. Well, thank you guys.
Am I right? I mean, I just want to make sure that.
You have to and from. I mean, I go in every day to my workplace. That is my commute, my to and from. If I then have to go out, elsewhere, that's different. If I then have to go out to do business elsewhere, leaving the job site, that's different. And that's so your to and from is your commute.
And generally, it's a primary place of work. And then you could have other places of work you do, too. So there are some complications that sneak into there as well.
I would say caution yourself on Schedule C. Schedule C is an area where, you can either be radically conservative or radically liberal as far as what you're taking as expenses. Just be conservative. I mean, make good judgment calls when you're looking at your Schedule C. Does this make sense? Because it's something that when the IRS looks at what they get a copy of your W-2. They get a copy of your 1099s for all of your interest. They get a copy of your 1099 miscellaneous showing your income from the Schedule C employment, but they don't have copies of all of those expenses. So that's what you need to have good documentation on to feel comfortable with what you've taken that you can substantiate under any type of audit.
And for those individuals who are looking at this type of operation for this year, perhaps didn't have it last year, keeping those records now and keeping good records is really essential to documenting the expenses.
Moses, thanks for your call. We have to take another break. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Bruce Gelsinger, Regional Tax Aid Leader for the AARP, and Mary McVicker, representing the Ohio Society of CPAs. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Tina Fey talks about her new memoir, Bossy Pants, about being a boss, writer, actor, daughter, and parent.
The mother's prayer for its daughter. First Lord, no tattoos. May neither the Chinese symbol for truth nor Winnie the Pooh holding the FSU logo stain her tender haunches.
Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. There are many ways to get the latest local news. Follow WOSU News on Twitter or like WOSU on Facebook. Get headlines delivered to your email by subscribing to our Daily News Loop e-newsletter. Just visit WOSU.org/email to sign up.
Support for WOSU 89.7 comes from the Women's Fund of Central Ohio, presenting Goldie Hawn for the 2011 Keyholder event on May 11th at the Ohio Theater. Tickets and more information online at womensfundcentralohio.org.
And stay with 89.7 NPR News later today, beginning at 2, for coverage of President Obama's fiscal policy speech. NPR will provide complete analysis of the president's plans for the 2012 budget. Listen to an NPR News special this afternoon at 2 on 89.7 NPR News. Sunshine today and a high of 62 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about that last-minute question you might have. Before you file your taxes, they're due on Monday. All your payments are due on Monday. Your taxes need to be filed on Monday. There are exceptions, and that's what we're here to explain and talk about today with my guests. Bruce Gelsinger, he is Regional Tax Aid Leader for the AARP, and Mary McVicker of the Ohio Society of CPAs. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And John from German Village, you're on the show. Welcome.
Yes, I have a question about if the tax credit was not taken for replacing windows or replacing the furnace, if it wasn't taken in the year that it was installed, how long do you have before you can still take that credit? I'll take the answer off the air.
Well, I believe that tax credit actually phased out at the end of 2010. The residential energy efficient credit was up to a maximum of $1,500 available for anything placed in service in 2009 and 10 after a certain date in 2009, but you couldn't double dip. You couldn't take 1500 2009 and 1500 2010. So if you filed your return and you did not include the credit, and as a taxpayer, you need to claim the credit for the year it was incurred, then you would have to go through the amended return process that Bruce talked about. And so you would have an amended return to claim that $1,500, and you'd have 3 years to file.
And you would file that return for the tax year you had that credit due.
2009.
Yes, or 2010.
Okay. Joe in Pickerington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. My question concerns corporate taxes. I worked for a major international company, and for the last 10 years, we would take our leftover surplus expense money, and I would be given the responsibility to spend it, and it could be up to $1 million. But my guidelines were that I had to spend the money and receive the goods in the current year, but we weren't able, when we'd order a semi or expensive test equipment, it would I would get the company to receive the cash, we would pay for it, and then have documentation sent that we'd received the product. I learned that this is referred to as crooking the books. And when I said I'm not going to be involved in this anymore, I was released. Is what they're doing proper?
So there is excess funds from what?
From our operating budget. We would have an operating budget, say, of $14 million for the year for my department for expenses. At the end of the year, in late November, for the last 10 years, I was requested to spend surplus money. And the guidelines, I've been told, you have to spend the money, have them receive the check that we paid for it, and receive the goods in the current year. You can't. I've had times where I've had a contractor who provides workers bill me for $50,000, like they did the work in 2010, but in actuality, they really did the work in 2011.
Oh, well, that, okay.
There's two different questions there, as I see it.
I think, I'm not sure of the comfort level on answering this, just because I'm not sure of all the steps involved here. You have to follow, as a company, you have to follow your income and expenses based on the type of accounting method you're using. Most corporations, if this is a C corporation, would have to follow an accrual basis method. So if the expense was booked, and it was booked because of expenses that are occurring in 2010, in the current year, then that would be the expense that would be associated with that year. If you're cash basis, then you're basically, if you pay out this year, the expense is for now. But there is matching, and I don't know if it's appropriate, Vinny, right now to go through all of the different matching rules there. But there is matching as far as if you're paying wages out to someone and they're not reporting it as income now, and you're reporting it as a deduction now. There are things like that. It sounds like you're in a sticky situation, and there are some rules out there, but I don't know if I have the best answer for you.
Well, if I could follow up, to me the issue is I pay to have a ditch dug in 2010, and the charge is $20,000. But I did, and I report that the ditch has been dug, and they pay the contractor. But in actuality, it might not be for 3 or 4 months until the spring. And tax laws change. So wouldn't that be, they could be at a higher or lower tax rate 3-6 months later.
Okay.
And again, that would be the matching. I think it's a little bit difficult to go into, but that would be the matching as far as when is that income being reported on the other side, things like that. That would be, I think there is some exposure there, but I don't think I have enough to give you the full extent here.
Scott in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hello, Scott.
Question. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I have a question about the 2009, the tax year, first-time home buyers credit. I think it was 2009. It's a long story why, which I won't go into, but okay. I haven't done my taxes yet for that year. I'm getting ready to do them now. And my question is, can I still get that credit? I did buy a house in that year. Where can I get the forms now that would apply to that particular credit? My understanding was there were some special forms you had to file in order to get that.
Okay.
The IRS website does have the forms for 2009 on there as well as 2010, so that should cover you regarding the forms. Whatever you were entitled to file in 2009, even though it's late at this point, can still be filed. For the more general question is about filing, I would always encourage people to file in the year when it's due, because the filing, if you don't file, the penalties are higher than not paying the tax if there's tax due. But yes, the forms are available, and you should be taking the full credits that you're allowed on that return.
Thank you, Scott.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Julie from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I wasn't administrator for a relative trust, and in 2009 we filed the final return. However, in 2010 the trust received $11.80 interest from a checking account, plus it also received a state and federal refund. And I have two questions. First, the refunds are not taxable, correct? And then the second is, do I need to file returns for $11.80?
Who were the beneficiaries of the trust?
Who were the beneficiaries?
Yes.
There were 11 relatives.
Okay. I guess if the trust deducted the tax, if the trust deducted the state and local taxes in the trust filing, then yes, that refund is income, because that was an expense that they had deducted previously. My thoughts here are probably on the $11. If you could report the income and, you know, designate on the return who the identification number of the trust and who's reporting the income, I think you've covered your $11.
Would this be getting that form for the amended, if you've already filed and this is after the fact?
Well, yeah, because this is actually income in 2010. The trust was final in 2009.
Correct.
So the trust, and the trust was paying all the tax, or was it all getting reported to the beneficiaries?
It was reported to the beneficiaries.
And then the beneficiaries paid the tax?
Yes.
Okay, so I think that's one way you could handle it, is that the beneficiaries then would report this and then designate on their return, you know, for matching purposes, that the income, you know, just put in parentheses or things like that, as far as on the Schedule B reporting of the interest, where that income is sourced from, the identification number that, you know, the recipient of that income.
Oh, so the relatives who received, excuse me, who were the beneficiaries, they should have reported something for this year, 2010. I'm sorry, for the 2010 their tax return. Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess the question is, who received the interest and who received the refunds?
Who received the interest? The interest was received by both the beneficiaries and the refund. I'm sorry, the beneficiaries received both the income, the $11.80, and the return.
So it was split, do you say 11 ways through, yes, all their relatives?
There were 11 beneficiaries.
And so they split that income and they split the refunds?
Yes.
Then I think there's your answer. I think the income should follow, the reporting should follow who received it.
So
just follow it through to their individual returns and report it there.
Okay.
Okay, all right. Very good. Thank you.
Thanks, Julie. You're listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and our guests, we're talking about, well, if you haven't figured it out, we're talking about it's tax time and the last-minute tips for filing your taxes or how to prepare for next year. My guests, Bruce Gelsinger with the AARP and Mary McVicker with the Ohio Society of CPAs. Hosea, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. I'm Hosea. I work in 3 or 4 or 5 part-time jobs. And I have trouble with getting them to take out enough taxes to pay my bed in my state. And the problem is that one of our presidents, bless his heart, decided that if you don't make very much money, we're not going to take any taxes out for you. So on my W-4, I say I am have no dependents, and I'm not even dependent myself. And yet, if I don't make above some kind of threshold, they will not take out taxes. Now, for my retirement fund, I have a retirement. I was able to finally write on there a fixed amount for them to take out, but it doesn't seem to work for a part-time job.
Right.
And I turn in W-4s and say, you know, they won't let me take out a percentage, since I don't know how much I'm going to make. If I say take out $100, I may owe them money for because I have made $100 on the thing. Is there some way that I can, on a W-4 or some other obscure form, tell them I want you to take out, an amount, no matter if I don't make but $100 a month, I still want them to take out taxes. How do I do that?
I thought that was right on the W-4.
I believe there's a place on the W-4 that you can put a fixed amount on there.
Yeah.
In addition to the percentage in your situation.
Well, a fixed amount might work, but
that's your problem, is you're trying to take a percentage because you don't know when your next dollar's coming.
There's a couple of suggestions. One would be if your income is fluctuating quite a bit and your part-time jobs maybe are more prevalent part of the year but not other parts of the year, then maybe the quarterly payments is the way to go. If your income is relatively level or within a range, then you might want to even adjust the withholding on the pension you're getting using the W-4P form to cover you for the W-2s where they may not be withholding.
Right.
Hosea, thanks for your call.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. A couple emails, one from unemployed Steve in Cincinnati. Due to unemployment, I have not paid taxes for 2 years. What is the best path or process to follow to get up to date with IRS? Please note, I am still unemployed with no cash to pay back taxes.
So he has not filed. He has not filed, but he would have some compensation because unemployment is taxable.
Mm-hmm.
If he's been getting unemployment.
If he's been getting unemployment. And there are the rules about what level you must file. And if your income is below a certain level, like it's around $10,000 for a single individual, that there may be no tax due.
And there were rules as well that the first, was it $2,400 of unemployment was not taxable. So if he needs to get up to date, I think he should go ahead and there's not a reason to file an amended return because he hasn't filed an original return yet. So go ahead and file his returns. I'm surprised he hasn't received a notification yet from the IRS that he hasn't filed his returns. And then, you know, that's the best way to get up to date is to go ahead and file.
But if the only income is unemployment and there's very little other income,
right,
it may not qualify to file either. So it needs to be reviewed. Pull out the forms, take a look at them, and see if there are any other lines that should be filled in there as far as worldwide income is concerned for that individual.
I know last time what we talked about, too, is the statute of limitations runs both ways. If you haven't filed, you don't have a statute running, so that income is always able to go back and assess interest penalties on that if you don't have a filing in place. So that's the good reason for filing and keeping up to date. Now, obviously, if there's no filing requirement, that's another thing. But if there was and you haven't filed, there's not a statute if you have until you file, and then it runs from when you do file.
We have one more email from Paul, and just about a minute or so. He writes, if I'm a remote worker whose home office is in City A, but my employer's office is in City B, and I don't travel to work in City B, so do I have to pay income taxes to City B?
City A is the employer?
City A is where the worker lives and works
and
in their home.
And City B is the city
where the employer
is
located.
If he's getting wage income, the way it works is City B, the employer, the employer must withhold based on where the business is located. So withholding is happening there on his wage income. If he is living and working, you pay tax based on where you live as the individual, not based on where you work. So you go back to your resident city, and you're going to have tax due, but you get a credit for what was most municipalities give you a credit for where the tax that was paid based on where you worked. So it is still income. You're still an employee. You still have income. The city, the municipality taxing is different because the employer must withhold. The employer must withhold where the business is. You must pay tax where you live.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have. I want to wish everybody good luck in filing their taxes for 2010 and good luck in preparing for the year ahead. And thank my guest, Mary McVicker of the Ohio Society of CPAs. Mary, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And also Bruce Gelsinger, Regional Tax Aid Leader for AARP. Bruce, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7, NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.